mean, exactly what are we supposed to find?
Purple waves, Sandy joked with a wink at Turtle.
Mrs. Wexler uttered a cry of recognition and changed the order of two of her clues.
It's still gibberish, Mr. Hu complained.
Other players pressed the lawyer for more information. Ed Plum only shrugged.
Then could you please give us copies of the will?
A copy will be on file, Judge Ford began.
I'm afraid not, Your Honor, the lawyer said. The will
He paused and tried again.
The will not be filed until the first of the year. My instructions specifically state that no heir is allowed to see any of the documents until the game is over.
No copy? That's not fair. But wait, they did have a copy, a shorthand copy. Sydell Pulaski had plenty of attention now. She smiled back at the friendly faces, revealing a lipstick stain on her front teeth.
Isn't there some sort of a last statement? Sandy asked Plum. I mean, like the intern says, nothing makes any sense.
11th. Senseless, you say? Death is senseless, yet makes way for the living. Life, too, is senseless, unless you know who you are, what you want, and which way the wind blows. So, on with the game. The solution is simple if you know whom you are looking for. But heirs beware, be aware. Some are not who they say they are, and some are not who they seem to be. Whoever you are, it's time to go home. God bless you all, and remember this, buy Westing Paper Products.
Chapter 8. The Paired Heirs. During the night, Flora Baumbach's Itsy Bitsy Snowflings raged into a blizzard. The tenants of Sunset Towers awoke from clue-chasing, blood-dripping dreams, bound in twisted sheets and imprisoned by 15-foot snowdrifts. No telephones. No electricity. Snowbound with a murderer. The slow procession looked like some ancient mysterious rite as partner sought out partner on the windowless stairs, and silent pairs threaded through the corridors in the flickering light of crooked, color-striped candles, the product of Turtle's stint at summer camp.
These handmade candles are both practical and romantic, she said,
peddling her wares from apartment door to apartment door to frightened tenants at 7 in the morning. Oh, it's only Turtle.
And the colored stripes tell time, which is very handy if your electric clock stopped. Each stripe burns exactly 1/2 hour, more or less. 12 stripes, 6 hours.
How much?
Not wishing to take advantage of this emergency, I've reduced the price to only $5 each.
Outrageous. Even more so when the electricity came on 2 hours after her last sale.
Sorry, no refunds, Turtle said.
No matter. What was $5 to heirs of an estate worth $200 million? Clues. They had to work on those clues. Behind closed doors. Whisper. Someone may be listening. Not all the heirs were huddled in plotting, puzzle-solving pairs. Jake Wexler had retreated to his office after a long and loud argument with his wife. He sure could have used half of that $10,000, but he wouldn't admit it. Not to her. The forfeited money upset her more than the murder of her uncle, if he was her uncle. 5 floors above, Jake's partner stood before the restaurant's front window, staring at the froth on the angry lake and beyond. No one had bothered to tell Madame Hu about the Westing game. Other players were snowbound elsewhere. Denton Deer in the hospital. Sandy at home. No one gave a thought to where Otis Amber or Crow might be. But Sydell Pulaski was there, thumping her crutch against the baseboards as she limped through the carpeted halls on the arm of her pretty partner. Not one, but 7 tenants had invited her to morning coffee or afternoon tea. Murderer or not, they had to see Pulaski's copy of that will.
3 lumps, please. Angela drinks it black.
Your health?
Thank the Lord I'm still able to hobble about.
Your job?
I was private secretary to the president of Schultz Sausages. Poor Mr. Schultz, I don't know how he'll manage without me.
Your shorthand notes?
Thank you for the refreshments. I must hurry back for my medication. Come, Angela.
One heir had not invited them in, but that didn't stop Seidel Pulaski from barging in to apartment 2D.
Hi, Chris. Just thought we'd pop in to see how you're doing. Don't be scared. I'm not the murderer. Angela is not the murderer, and we don't think you are the murderer. Mind if I sit down?
The secretary toppled into a chair next to the invalid before he could reply.
Here, I stole a macaroon for you. It's so sticky you'll be tasting it all day. I must have 6 strands of coconut between my upper molars.
Chris took the cookie.
Just look at that smile. It could break your heart.
Angela wished her partner had not said that. It seemed so insensitive, so crude. But at least Seidel was talking to him, which was more than she was able to do. Angela, the fortunate one, standing like a dummy.
I know Denton wants to work on the clues with you. He's snowbound, too.
You're pretty.
How did pretty come out? He meant to say nice. Chris bent his curly head over the geography book in his lap. She wasn't laughing at him. It was all right to ask her because she was going to marry his partner.
What are grands?
Angela did not understand. Chris fanned the pages of the book to a picture of a wheat field.
Grains?
Oh, grains. You want to know the names of some grains. Let's see, there's wheat, rye, corn, barley, oats.
Oats!
Angela thought the boy was going into a fit, but he was only repeating her last word. Oats. Seidel was puffing her warm breath on the window and wiping a frosted area clean with her sleeve.
There, now you'll be able to watch the birds again. Anything else we can do for you, young man?
Chris nodded.
Read me short hand notes.
The pretty lady and the funny lady moved quickly out the door. One limped, but it was a pretend limp, he could tell. Not like the limper on the Westinghouse lawn. Oats. Chris closed his eyes to picture the clues. 4. Plain. Grain. Shed. Grain equals oats equals Otis Amber. 4 plus D from shed equals Ford. But neither the delivery boy nor the judge limped. And he still hadn't figured out she or plane. He'd have to wait for Denton Deere. Denton Deere was smart. He was a doctor. Chris raised his binoculars to the cliff. Windblown drifts buttressed the house. Something moved on the second floor. A hand holding back the edge of a drape. Slowly, the heavy drape fell back against the window. The Westinghouse was snowbound too, and somebody was snowbound in it. Only one of the players thought the clues told how the $10,000 check was to be spent. Take stock in America, the will said. Go for broke, the will said.
In the stock market, Turtle said. And whoever makes the most money wins it all. The whole $200 million.
Their clues. C. Mountain. Am. O. Stood for symbols of 3 corporations listed on the stock exchange. SEA, MT, the abbreviation for mountain, AMO.
But M and O are separate clues, Flora Baumbach said. To confuse us. But what about the murderer? I thought we were supposed to find the name of the murderer. To put us off the track.
If the police suspected murder, she'd be in jail by now. Her fingerprints were over everything in the Westinghouse, including the corpse.
You don't really think one of us could have killed a living, breathing human being in cold blood, do you, Mrs. Baumbach? Do you?
Turtle did, but the dressmaker was a cream puff.
Don't you look at me like that, Turtle Wexler. You know very well I could never think such a thing. I must have misunderstood. Oh my, I just wish Miss Pulaski had shown us her copy of the will.
Turtle returned to her calculations, multiplying numbers of shares times price, adding a broker's commission, trying to total the sums to the $10,000 they had to spend. Flora Baumbach may have been wrong about the murder, but she was not convinced of Turtle's plan.
What about buy Westing paper products? I'm sure that was in the will. Great, Turtle exclaimed. We'll do just that. We'll add WPP to the list of stocks we're going to buy.
Flora Baumbach had watched enough television commercials to know that buy Westing paper products meant that as soon as she could get to market, she'd buy all the Westing products on the shelf. Still, it felt good having a child around again. She'd play along, gladly.
You know, Turtle, you may be right about putting our money in the stock market. I remember the will said, "May God thy gold refine." That must be from the Bible.
Shakespeare,
Turtle replied. All quotations were either from the Bible or Shakespeare. Mr. Who moved aside a full ashtray with a show of distaste and rearranged the clues.
Purple fruited makes more sense.
Grace Wexler looked across the restaurant to the lone figure at the window.
Are you sure your wife doesn't understand English? I mean, after living here so long?
That's my second wife. She came over from Hong Kong 2 years ago.
She does look young, but it's so hard to tell ages of people of the Oriental persuasion,
Grace said. Why was he glaring at her like that?
Your wife is quite lovely, you know, so doll-like and inscrutable.
Who bit off half a chocolate bar? He had enough problems with the empty restaurant, a lazy son, and his nagging ulcer. Now he had to put up with this bigot. Grace lit another cigarette and rearranged the clues to read, Purple Waves.
You heard that doorman say purple waves. It must mean something. And that ghastly secretary was wearing a dress with purple waves last night, not to mention her crutch.
You should not speak unkindly of those less fortunate than you,
Who said.
You're quite right, Grace replied. I thought the poor thing handled her infirmity with great courage. Traveling mimosa, my future son-in-law says. He's a doctor, you know. Anyhow, Pulaski couldn't possibly be the murderer, not the way she gimps around. Besides, how could my Uncle Sam know she'd wear purple waves to the funeral?
Who waved the cigarette smoke from his face?
The murderer had to have a motive. How about this? A niece murders her rich uncle to inherit his money.
Good sport that she was, Grace tossed back her head and uttered an amused,
ha ha ha. Not that I care, Who said. That cheating moneybags got what he deserved. What's the matter?
Look!
Grace pointed to the clues. Fruited. Purple. Waves. 4C.
4C! The murderer lives in apartment 4C!
I live in 4C, Who barked. If Sam Westing wanted to say 4C, he would have written number 4, letter C. S-E-A means sea, like what a turtle swims in.
Come now, Mr. Who, we are both being silly. Have you spoken to your son about his clues?
Some son. If you can catch him, you can ask him.
Who stuffed the rest of the candy bar in his mouth.
And some business I've got here. Everybody orders up, nobody orders down. That coffee shop is sending me to the poorhouse. And your Angela and that Pulaski woman, they didn't show us the will. They didn't give us their clues. They didn't pay for 3 cups of jasmine tea and 6 almond cookies. And you smoke too much.
And you eat too much.
Grace threw her coin purse on the table and stormed out of the restaurant. Change, that's all he'll get from her. He'd have to beg on his knees before she'd sign Grace Windsor Wexler on the $10,000 check, that madman. Some pair they made, Attila the Hun and Gracie the Useless. Gracie Windkloppel Wexler, heir pretender, pretentious heir. First, the money. They signed their names to the check. Half would go into Doug Who's savings account. Half would go to Theo's parents. Next, the clues. His. N. On. To. The. For.
Maybe they're numbers. 1, 2,
3, 4, Theo guessed.
I still say on is no, the bored track star said. He clasped his hands behind his head, leaned back in the coffee shop booth, and stretched his long legs under the opposite bench. And no is what we got. No real clues, no leads, no will.
After 3 cups of coffee, 2 pastries, and a bowl of rice pudding with cream, Seidel Pulaski had offered nothing in return. Theo refused to give up.
Are you sure you didn't see anything unusual at the Westinghouse that night?
I didn't kill Westing, if that's what you mean. And the only unusual thing I saw was Turtle Wexler. I think the pest is madly in love with me. How's that for luck?
Get serious, Doug. One of the heirs is a murderer. We could all get killed.
Just because somebody zapped the old man doesn't mean he's going to kill again.
Dad says...
Doug paused. His father's comment about awarding a medal to the murderer might be incriminating. Theo tried another tack.
I was playing chess with somebody in the game room last night.
Who?
That's what's strange. I don't know who. We'll have to find out which one of the heirs plays chess.
Since when is chess playing evidence for murder?
Well, it's something to go on, Theo replied.
And another thing, the will said no 2 sets of clues are alike. Maybe all the clues put together make one message, a message that points to the murderer. Somehow or other, we'll have to get the heirs to pool their clues.
Oh, sure. The killer can't wait to hand over the clues that will hang him.
Doug rose. Snowbound or not, he had to stay in shape for the track meet. For the rest of the day, he jogged through the hallways and up and down stairs, scaring the nervous tenants half out of their wits. Judge J.J. Ford had no doubt that the clues she shared with the doorman were meant for her. But Sam Westing could toss off sharper insults than skies, am, shining, brother. His choice of words must have been limited. Therefore, these clues were part of a longer statement, a statement that named a name, the name of the murderer. No, Westing could not have been murdered. If his life had been threatened, if he had been in danger of any kind, he would have insisted on police protection. He owned the police. He owned the whole town. Sam Westing was not the type to let himself get killed. Not unless he was insane. The judge opened the envelope given her by the incompetent Plum. A certificate of sanity, dated last week.
Having thoroughly examined, keen mind and memory, excellent physical condition. Signed, Sidney Sykes, M.D.
Sykes. That sounded familiar. The judge scanned the obituary she had cut from Saturday's newspaper.
Samuel Westing and his friend, Dr. Sidney Sykes, were involved in a near-fatal automobile accident. Both men were hospitalized with severe injuries. Sykes resumed his Westingtown medical practice and the post of county coroner, but Westing disappeared from sight. Sykes was Westing's friend, and, she remembered, a witness to the will. But he was also a physician in good standing. She would accept his opinion on Westing's sanity, for the time being at least. Back to the clues. Look at her, the big-time judge, fussing over scraps of Westing's super-strength paper towels.
Forget the clues,
she said aloud, rising from her desk to putter about the room. Nibbling on a macaroon, she stacked the used coffee cups on a tray. If only that Pulaski person had let her study the will, that's where the real clues were buried, among the veiled threats and pompous promises, the slogans and silliness in that hodgepodge of a will. In his will, Sam Westing implied, he did not state, he implied that, 1, he was murdered, 2, the murderer was one of the heirs, 3, he alone knew the name of the murderer, and 4, the name of the murderer was the answer to the game. The game. A tricky, divisive, Westing game. No matter how much fear and suspicion he instilled in the players, Sam Westing knew that greed would keep them playing the game. Until the murderer was captured. And punished. Sam Westing was not murdered, but one of his heirs was guilty. guilty of some offense against a relentless man, and that heir was in danger. From his grave, Westing would stalk his enemy, and through his heirs, he would wreak his revenge. Which one? Which heir was the target of Westing's vindictiveness? In the name of justice, she would have to find Westing's victim before the others did. She would have to learn everything she could about each one of the heirs. Who are they, and how did their lives touch Westing's, these 16 strangers whose only connection with one another was Sunset Towers? Sunset Towers. She'd start from there. Good. The telephones are working again. The number she dialed was answered on the first ring.
Hi there. This is a recording of yours truly, Barney Northrup. I'm at your service, soon as I get back in my office, that is. Just sing out your problem to old Barney here when you hear the beep.
Beep. J.J. Ford hung up without singing out her problem to old Barney. He, too, could be involved in Westing's plot. The newspaper. She would try the newspaper. Surely someone was snowbound there. After eight rings, a live voice answered.
We usually don't supply that kind of information over the phone, but since it's you, Judge Ford, I'll be happy to oblige. Just spell out the names and I'll call back if I find anything.
Thank you, I'd appreciate that.
It was a beginning. Sam Westing was dead, but maybe, just once, she could beat him at his own game. His last game. Having found what she wanted in Turtle's desk, Angela returned to her frilly bedroom where Sydell Pulaski, glasses low on her nose, was perched on a ruffled stool at the vanity table, smearing blue shadow on her eyelids.
First, we tackle our own clues, the secretary said, frowning at the result in the threefold mirror.
Unlucky from the day she was born, she now had a beautiful and well-loved partner. There was always the chance that they alone had been given the answer. She unsealed the envelope and held it out to Angela.
Take one.
Angela removed the first clue.
Good.
Now it was Sydell's turn.
Glory be!
She exclaimed, thinking she had the name of the murderer. Her thumb was covering the letter D. The word was Hood. Angela's turn. The third clue was From. Sydell's turn. The fourth clue was spacious. The fifth and last clue was... Angela uttered a low moan. Her hand shook as she passed the paper to her partner. The fifth and last clue was Grace.
Grace, that's your mother's name, isn't it?
Sydell said.
Well, don't worry. That clue doesn't mean your mother is the murderer. The will says... It is not what you have, it's what you don't have that counts.
The secretary had not yet transcribed the shorthand, but she had read it through several times before hiding the notebook in a safe place.
By the way, are you really related to Mr. Westing?
Angela shrugged. Sydell assumed that meant no and turned to the clues. Good. Grace. From. Hood. Spacious.
The only thing I can figure from these clues is, good gracious, from hood space. As soon as the parking lot is shoveled out, we'll peek under the hoods of all the cars. A map or more clues may be hidden there, maybe even the murder weapon. Now let's hear about the other clues.
Angela reported on the clues gathered in the game room and during the day's comings and goings.
King, Queen. Otis Amber said King Otis and Queen Crow.
Purple waves. Mother switched two clues around when Sandy mentioned those words.
On or no. Doug and Theo could not decide whether that clue was right side up or upside down.
Grains. Chris Theodorakis thinks that clue refers to Otis Amber. You know, grains, oats.
M.T.
Angela showed her partner the crumpled scrap of paper she had picked up along with Sydell's dropped crutch during Flora Baumbach's tea party. 500 shares, MT, at $6 equals $3,000, plus broker's commission, 90, equals $3,090.
I checked Turtle's diary. She is not following any stock with a symbol like MT, so it must be one of her clues. MT could stand for either mountain or empty.
Excellent, Seidel Pulaski remarked. Her partner was beautiful, but not dumb.
Read all the clues together now.
Good, hood, from, spacious, grace, king, queen, purple, waves, on, no, grains, mountain, empty.
Seidel was disappointed.
It is not what you have, it's what you don't have that counts. And what we don't have is a verb. Nothing makes sense without a verb. What about the judge?
Judge Ford thought her clues were an insult, and she said something about playing a pawn in Westing's game, and she had a clipping of the obituary on her desk. This obituary. Angela handed Seidel the newspaper taken from Turtle's drawer.
What's that?
It was a knock on the front door. It was footsteps in the living room. It was Theo.
Anyone for a game of chess?
He asked, leading through the bedroom doorway.
No, thank you,
Seidel replied, looking very busy. Theo smiled shyly at Angela and left. Seidel read the obituary in Turtle's newspaper. The words $200 million were underlined, but she found a more interesting item.
Sam Westing was a master at chess. No wonder Theo's so interested. Do you know anything about the game, Angela?
A little,
she replied slowly, putting the pieces in order.
The judge says she's a pawn, and Otis Amber says he's the king. Crow's the queen.
Oh, well, it's probably just a coincidence. We can't leave any stone unturned, Seidel insisted. As the will says, object of the game, to win.
What did you say? Object of the game, to win? How about object of the game, twin? Maybe the murderer is a twin.
Twin!
Seidel liked that. The only problem would be getting the murderer to admit that he, or she, is a twin.
Let's get back to my apartment. It's time I transcribed those notes.
Angela helped the invalid to her feet and nervously peered in both directions before stepping into the hallway. Seidel chuckled at her timidity.
There's nothing to be scared of, Angela. Westing was murdered for his money, and we're not rich yet. We won't be rich enough to be murdered until we find the name, and by the time we get the money from the estate, the murderer will be locked up in jail.
In spite of the impeccable logic, Angela looked back over her shoulder several times on the way to 3C.
Strange.
Seidel stood before her open apartment door. She had slammed it shut on leaving, but had not locked the deadbolt. After all, not even a burglar could get into a snowbound building. Unless. Angela, too frightened to notice that Seidel ran through the apartment with her crutch in the air, found her partner in the bathroom frantically tossing soiled towels from the hamper. Seidel Pulaski stared at the bare wicker bottom, then sank to the rim of the bathtub, shaking her head in disbelief. Someone in Sunset Towers had stolen the shorthand notebook. Chapter 9. Lost and Found. Early the next morning, a typed index card was tacked to the elevator's back wall.
Lost. Important business papers of no value to anyone but the owner. Please return to Seidel Pulaski, 3C. No questions asked.
The shorthand notebook was not returned, but the idea of a bulletin board was an instant success. By late afternoon, the elevator was papered with notices and filled with tenants facing sideways and backwards, reading as they rode up and down.
Lost. Silver cross on a filigree chain, topaz pin and earrings, gold-filled cufflinks. Return to Grace Windsor Wexler, 3D. Reward.
All players willing to discuss sharing their clues come to the coffee shop tomorrow, 10 a.m. Whoever stole my Mickey Mouse clock better give it back. Just leave it in the hall in front of apartment 3D when no one's looking. Turtle Wexler.
Order down, not up. Or come on up to the fifth floor and dine in elegance at Shin Hu's restaurant.
specializing in exquisite Chinese cuisine.
Lost. String of pearls. Sentimental value. If found, please bring them to apartment 2C. Thank you, Flora Baumbach. Dressmaking and alterations reasonably priced.
Found. 6 clues. The following clues, printed on squares of Westing toilet tissue, were found in the 3rd floor hallway. Braided. Kicking. Tortoise. Brat.
I am having an informal party this evening from 8 o'clock on. You are all invited. Please come. J.J. Ford, apartment 4D.
Turtle, wherever you are, be home at 7:30, sharp. Your loving mother.
Mom, I'm home.
No one else was. On reading Mr. Wexler's note in the elevator, Flora Baumbach had insisted,
"You must do what your mother says,"
when Turtle replied, "Like showing her our clues?" Flora Baumbach's answer was,
"Perhaps so. After all, she is your mother."
Flora Baumbach was sappy, always smiling that dumb smile, always so polite to everybody, and so timid. When they had finally reached a snowbound broker, Flora Baumbach was so nervous she dropped the telephone. Turtle had to admit to some nervousness herself, but it was the first real order she had ever placed. For a minute there, she thought she might choke on the thumping heart that had jumped into her throat, but she had pulled off the transaction like a pro. Now, if only the stock market would go up, she'd show Mr. Westing about refining gold. The next part of the will would read, "Whichsoever pair made the most money with the $10,000 inherits the whole estate." She was sure of it.
"Oh, there you are."
Grace Wexler acted as if Turtle was the tardy one, but she quickly sweetened.
"Come, dear, let's go to your room and I'll fix your hair."
Her mother sat behind her on the edge of the narrow bed, loosed the dark brown hair, and brushed it to a gloss. She had not done that with such care in a long, long time.
"Have you eaten?"
"Mrs. Baumbach made me a dinner." Turtle felt the fingers dividing the hair into strands. Her mother was so warm, so close.
"Your poor father's probably starving. He's been so busy on the phone, changing appointments and all."
"Daddy's eating in the coffee shop. I just saw him there." Turtle had dashed in, shouting,
"The braided tortoise strikes again!"
and kicked a surprised Theo in the shin. It was Doug Hu, not Theo, who had made the sign. Her mother twisted the 3 strands into a braid.
"I think you should wear your party dress tonight. You look so pretty in pink."
"Pretty?" She had never used that word before, not about her. "What's going on?"
"You know, sweetheart, I'm rather hurt that you won't tell your own mother about your clues."
So that was it. She should have known. "My lips are sealed," Turtle said defiantly.
"Just one eensy-beensy clue?"
Grace wheedled, winding a rubber band around the end of the braid.
"N-n-n,"
Turtle replied through sealed lips. Angela came into the small room and tugged Turtle's braid. Only her sister could get away with that. Beaming on her favorite, Grace took her hand, then gasped,
"Angela, where's your engagement ring?"
"I have a rash on my finger." Thump, thump. Sidell Pulaski appeared in the doorway.
"Hi, what's everybody doing in the closet?"
"See, I told you this is a closet,"
Turtle said. Grace ignored the complaint. It did no good being nice to that ungrateful child, never satisfied, always whining about something or other.
"Oh, hello, Miss Pulaski."
"I've been feeling a bit weakly, thank you, but nothing can keep me from a party."
Seidel's crutch was painted in black and white squares to match her black and white checkered dress. Her large hoop earrings were also black and white. The white one dangled from her left ear, the black from her right.
"The party is such a lovely idea,"
Grace said, warming up to the owner of the shorthand notes.
When I saw the invitation in the elevator, I suggested to Mr. Who that he call the judge to see if she needed hors d'oeuvres, and sure enough, he got an order for 6 dozen.
She turned to Angela.
Hadn't you better get dressed, dear? It's getting late. It's too bad Dr. D can't escort you to the party, but your father and I will take you.
Angela and I are going together. We're partners, you know.
Seidel had it all planned. They were to appear in identical costumes. Tonight was the night they would discover if one of the heirs was a twin.
I'm going to the party with Mrs. Baumbach,
Turtle remarked.
The sign says everyone's invited.
Again, Grace ignored her.
By the way, Miss Pulaski, I do hope you've changed your mind about showing me your notes.
It was the secretary's turn to seal her lips. She wouldn't put it past that uppity Grace Windsor Wexler to steal the notebook from an unfortunate cripple and then rub it in. Grace tried again, her voice dripping with honey.
You know, of course, that if I do win the inheritance, everything I own goes to Angela.
Turtle bounded up.
Let me out of here. A person can't breathe in this closet.
She kicked the bed, kicked the chair, kicked the desk, and elbowed past the disapproving secretary.
What in the world is wrong with that child?
Her mother said. Judge Ford was instructing Theo in the art of bartending when the telephone rang. The snowbound newspaper man had found several items in the files.
First, the engagement announcement of Angela Wexler to D. Denton Deere. Next, several clippings on a lawsuit brought against Sam Westing by an inventor named...
Hold on, please.
Mr. Who waddled in with a large tray of appetizers. The judge pointed him to the serving buffet and apologized to her caller.
I'm sorry, would you repeat that name?
James Who. He claimed Westing stole his idea of the disposable paper diaper...
1 minute, please.
The judge cupped her hand over the mouthpiece.
Please don't leave, Mr. Who. I was hoping you'd stay for the party. As a guest, of course. Your wife and son, too.
Who grunted. He hated parties. He had seen his fill of people eating and drinking and acting like clowns, jabbering like... So that's it. Jabbering. Dropping clues.
I'll be right back.
The receiver hissed with an impatient sigh. Then the researcher went on.
I've got a thick file of sports items on another Who, Doug Who. Seems he runs a pretty fast mile for a high school kid. That's all I could find on the names you gave me, but I still have stacks of Westing clippings to go through.
Thank you so much.
The doorbell rang. The party was about to begin. Chapter 10. The Long Party.
I hope we're not too early.
Grace Windsor Wexler always arrived at parties fashionably late, but not tonight. She didn't want to miss a thing, or a clue, or wait around in her apartment with a murderer on the loose.
I don't think you've met my husband, Dr. Wexler.
Call me Jake.
Hello, Jake,
Judge Ford said, a firm handshake, laugh lines around his eyes. He needed a sense of humor with that social-climbing wife.
What a lovely living room, so practically furnished,
Grace commented.
Our apartments are identical in layout, but mine looks so different. You must come see what I've done with it. I'm a decorator, you know. 3 bedrooms do seem rather spacious for a single woman.
What does she mean, 3 bedrooms? This is a 1-bedroom apartment.
Would you care for an appetizer, Mrs. Wexler? I'm curious to know exactly how you are related to the Westing family.
The judge had hoped to take the heiress by surprise, but Grace gained time by coughing.
Goodness, that ginger is spicy. It's the Szechuan cooking style, you know. How am I related? Let me see. Uncle Sam was my father's oldest brother. Or was he the youngest brother of my father's father? Excuse me, I have to greet my other guests.
The judge left the prattling pretender. Father's brother or father's father's brother. If the relationship was on the paternal side, her maiden name would be Westing.
The party went on and on. No one dared be first to leave. Safety in numbers, especially with a judge there. So the guests ate and drank and jabbered, and they watched the other guests eat and drink and jabber. No one laughed.
I guess murder isn't very funny, Jake Wexler said.
Neither is money, Mr. Hu replied glumly.
Deciding that his wife had found the perfect partner, the podiatrist moved on to the two women standing in silence at the front window.
Cheer up, Angie Pie. You'll see your Denton soon enough.
His daughter twisted out of his embrace.
Are you all right, Angela?
I'm fine. She was not fine. Why did they ask about Denton all the time, as though she was nobody without him? Oh, it wasn't just that. It wasn't even the humiliation of her mother chiding her about the twin costume in front of everybody and sending her back to their apartment to change clothes. It was more than that. It was everything. Jake turned to Madame Hu.
Hi there, partner.
She doesn't speak English, Dad, Angela said flatly.
And she never will, Angela, if no one talks to her.
Snow,
said Madame Hu. Jake followed her pointing finger.
That's right, snow. Lots and lots of snow. Snow, trees, road, Lake Michigan.
China,
said Madame Hu.
China? Sure, why not? Jake replied. China.
Angela left the chatting couple. Why couldn't she have made some sort of friendly gesture? Because she might do the wrong thing and annoy her mother. Angela, the obedient daughter, did only what her mother told her to do.
Hello, Angela. One of these tidbits might cheer you up.
Judge Ford held the tray before her.
I hear you'll be getting married soon.
Some people have all the luck,
Seidel Pulaski said, appearing from nowhere to lean over the tray to spear a cube of pork.
Of course, not all of us women have opted for marriage. Right, Judge Ford? Some of us prefer the professional life, though I must say, if a handsome young doctor like Denton Deer proposed to me, I might just change my mind. Too bad he doesn't happen to be twins.
Excuse me. The judge moved away.
I'm still not having any luck at all, Angela,
Seidel whined.
If only your mother hadn't made you change clothes, someone surely would have mentioned twin. It's much harder to judge reactions when I have to bring up the subject myself. You shouldn't let your mother boss you like that. You're a grown woman, about to be married.
Excuse me. Angela moved away.
Yes, thank you. I would like a refill,
Seidel said to nobody and hobbled to the bar.
Something non-alcoholic, please. Doctor's orders. Make it a double. Twins.
Twins? What's she talking about? Theo wondered, staring at the black and white checkered costume.
Two ginger ales for the chessboard coming right up.
Hidden among her guests, the judge studied the two people standing off in the corner, the only pair in Sunset Towers who were not Westing heirs. George Theodorakis placed his hand on the shoulder of his invalid son, a large, bronze, hard-working hand, like Theo's. Theo resembled him in many ways, tall, wide shoulders, slim-waisted, the same thick, straight black hair, but age had chiseled the father's face into sharper planes. His troubled eyes stared across the room at Angela. Catherine Theodorakis, a slight, careworn woman, gazed down on her younger son with tired, dark-circled eyes. From his wheelchair, Chris watched legs. Other than the funny lady with the shorthand notes, the only limpers were his brother Theo, Turtle had kicked him again, and Mrs. Wexler, who stood on one leg rubbing her stockinged foot against her calf. A high-heeled shoe stood alone on the carpet beneath her. Judge Ford didn't limp. Besides, she couldn't be a murderer, in spite of his clues. Nobody here looks like a murderer. They're all nice people, even this fat Chinese man who grumbles all the time. George Theodorakis greeted Mr. Hu with,
How's business?
Who spun around and stomped off from his fellow restaurant owner in a huff of anger. James Who, inventor, that's who the judge wanted to talk to. But there was a problem at the bar. A long line had formed, and it wasn't moving.
There are 16 white pieces and 16 black pieces in chess,
Theo was explaining to Seidel Pulaski.
Do you play chess, Judge Ford?
A bit, but I haven't played in years.
The judge led the secretary away from the crowded bar. Theo must think the Westing game has something to do with chess. He may be right. It certainly is as complicated as a chess game.
But I did study,
Doug was arguing. The judge interrupted.
I haven't had a chance to thank you for the delicious food, Mr. Who. How long have you been in the restaurant business?
Running up and down stairs is not studying, Who said.
Seidel Pulaski butted in.
Father and son, you look more like twins.
You're equal partners with that Theodorakis kid, Who continued. Why didn't you insist on holding the meeting in our restaurant instead of that greasy coffee shop?
Because some people don't like chow mein for breakfast?
Seidel Pulaski replied.
There you are, dear.
Grace patted a stray wisp of Angela's hair into place.
We must do something about your coiffure. I'll make an appointment for you with my hairdresser once the snow is cleared. Long hair is too youthful for a woman about to be married. I can't understand what got into you, Angela, coming to this party in that old checkered dress and those awful accessories, just because your partner dresses like a freak.
She's not a freak, Mother.
I was just speaking to Mr. Who about catering the wedding shower on Saturday. I arranged for little Madam Who to serve in one of those slinky Chinese gowns. Where are you going? Angela!
Angela rushed into Judge Ford's kitchen. She had to get away. She had to be alone, by herself, or she'd burst out crying. She was not alone. Crow was there. The two women stared at each other in surprise, then turned away. Poor baby. Crow wanted to reach out to the pretty child. She wanted to take her in her arms and say,
"Poor, poor baby. Go ahead and cry."
But she couldn't. All she could say was,
"Here."
Angela took the dish towel from the cleaning woman and bunched it against her face to muffle the wrenching sobs. The guests jabbered on and on about the weather, about food, about football, about chess, about twins. Turtle was slumped on the couch, scornful of dumb grown-up parties. You'd think one of them would know something about the stock market. She missed Sandy. Sandy was the only one in this dumb building she could talk to.
"Remember that quotation, 'May God thy gold refine'?"
Flora Baumbach asked.
"Let's take a poll. I'll bet 10 cents it's from the Bible."
"Shakespeare," Turtle argued.
"And make it $10.
"Oh, my! Well, all right, $10.
Together they made the rounds. 4 votes for the Bible, 3 for Shakespeare, and 1 abstention. Madam Who did not understand the question. Seidel Pulaski voted for the Bobbsey twins.
"And how do you know those words were in the will?"
she asked suspiciously. Too suspiciously. So that's what lost important business papers meant. Somebody stole the shorthand notes. Turtle smiled at the delicious nastiness of it all.
"I remember, that's all."
"If you remember so well, tell me what comes before that,"
Seidel challenged.
"I don't know. What?"
The secretary had an audience now.
"I don't mind telling you, but not if you ask like that."
Theo said,
"Please?"
Not Turtle. Seidel turned toward him with what should have been a gracious manner, but she grimaced when the top of the crutch poked her in the chest.
"The exact quotation,"
she announced loudly, hoping she was right,
"is, 'Spend it wisely, and may God thy gold refine.'"
Right or wrong, her guess was received with groans of disappointment. The heirs had expected more. A hint, a clue, something. It was time to go home. Chapter 11. The Meeting. A pale sun rose on the third snowbound morning. Lake Michigan lay calm, violet, now blue. But the tenants of Sunset Towers, on waking, turned to a different view. Lured by the Westinghouse, they stood at their side windows, scoffing at the danger, daring to dream. Should they or shouldn't they share their clues? Well, they'd go to the meeting in the coffee shop just to see what the others intended to do. Waiting in her closet of a room, Turtle stared at the white-weighted branches of the maple on the hill. A twig snapped in silence. A flurry speckled the crusted snow. Sometimes, when her mother was too busy to do her hair, she sent Angela in. But today no one came. They had forgotten about her. Brush and comb clutched in her fists like weapons, she stormed into apartment 2C.
"Do you know how to braid hair?"
Flora Baumbach's pudgy fingers, swift with a needle, were clumsy with a comb. But after several tangled attempts, she ended up with three equal strands.
"My, what thick hair you have! I tried braiding my daughter's hair once, but it was too fine, soft and wispy like a baby's, even in her teens."
That was the last thing Turtle wanted to hear.
"Was she pretty, your daughter?" "All mothers think their children are beautiful. Rosalie was an exceptional child, they said, but she was the lovingest person that ever was."
"My mother doesn't think I'm beautiful."
"Of course she does.
My mother says I looked just like a turtle when I was a baby, sticking my head out of the blanket. I still look like a turtle, I guess, but I don't care."
"Where's your daughter now?"
"Gone."
Flora Baumbach cleared the catch in her throat.
"There, that braid should hold for the rest of the day. By the way, you've never told me your real name."
"Alice," Turtle replied, swinging her head before the mirror. Not one single hair escaped its tight bind.
Mrs. Baumbach would make a good braider, if only she'd stop yakking about her exceptional child. Rosalie, what a dumb name.
"You'd better get to the meeting now. Remember, don't say a word to anyone about anything. Just listen."
"All right, Alice. I promise."
Theo wheeled his brother into the elevator and read the new message on the wall.
$25 reward for the return of a gold railroad watch inscribed to Ezra Ford in appreciation of 30 years' service to the Milwaukee Road. J.J. Ford, Apartment 4D.
Ford,
Chris said.
"That's right. Judge Ford. Must be her father's watch. Probably lost it. I don't think it could have been stolen by anyone at the party last night."
Chris smiled. His brother had not understood him. Good. This might be an important discovery. Judge Ford's name was the same as her apartment number. Ford, 4D. Theo led the waiting tenants through the kitchen where Mr. and Mrs. Theodorakis handed out cups of tea and coffee.
"Sorry, we've run out of cream and lemons. Please help yourself to some homemade pastries."
Walking into the coffee shop was like entering a cave. A wall of snow pressed against the plate glass window, scaling the door that once opened to the parking lot.
"I've got a car buried out there,"
Grace Wexler said, slipping into a booth opposite her partner.
"Hope I find it before the snowplows do."
"If they ever get here," Mr. Hu replied. "Good thing this meeting wasn't held in my restaurant. I'd go broke passing out free tea. If you call this tea."
He held up a tea bag with contempt, then groaned on seeing his sweat-suited son jog in with a sweet roll between his teeth and vault over his hands onto a stool.
"Where's your daughter, the turtle?"
Grace Wexler looked around.
"I don't know. Maybe she's helping her father with his bookkeeping."
"Bookkeeping!"
Mr. Hu let out a whoop. Grace had no idea what was so funny, but she joined him in loud laughter. Nothing stirred people's envy more than a private joke.
Thinking she was being laughed at, Sidell Pulaski dropped her polka dot crutch and spilled her coffee on Angela's tapestry bag before managing a solid perch on the counter stool. Clink, clink. Theo tapped a spoon against a glass for attention.
Thank you for coming. When the meeting is over, you are all welcome to stay for a chess tournament. Meanwhile, I'd like to explain why my partner and I, called this meeting. I don't know about your clues, but our clues don't make any sense.
The heirs stared at him with blank faces. No one nodded. No one even blinked.
Now then, if no two sets of clues are alike, as the will says, that could mean that each set of clues is only part of one message. The more clues we put together, the better chance we have of finding the murderer and winning the game. Of course, the inheritance will be divided into equal shares.
Sidell Pulaski raised her hand like a schoolgirl.
What about the clues that are in the will itself?
Yes, we'd appreciate having a copy of the will, Ms. Pulaski, Theo replied.
Well, equal shares doesn't seem quite fair, since I'm the only one here who thought of taking notes.
Sidell turned to the group, one penciled eyebrow arched high over her red sequined spectacles. Her self-congratulatory pose was too much for Mr. Hu. Grunting loudly, he squeezed out of the booth and slapped the shorthand pad on the counter.
Thief!
The secretary shrieked, nearly toppling off the stool as she grabbed her notebook.
Thief!
I did not steal your notebook, the indignant Hu explained. I found it on the table in my restaurant this morning. You can believe me or not, I really don't care, because those notes you so selfishly dangled under our noses are completely worthless. My partner knows shorthand, and she says your shorthand is nothing but senseless scrawls. Gibberish.
Pure gibberish, Grace Wexler added. Those are standard shorthand symbols, all right, but they don't translate into words. Thief!
Sidell cried, now accusing Mrs. Wexler.
Thief! Larcenist! Felon!
Don't, Sidell, Angela said softly, her eyes set on the D she was embroidering.
You wouldn't understand, Angela. You don't know what it's like to be...
Her voice broke. She paused, then lashed out at her enemies, all of them.
Who cares a fig about Sidell Pulaski? Nobody, that's who. I'm no fool, you know. I knew I couldn't trust any one of you. You can't read my shorthand because I wrote in Polish.
Polish? When the meeting was again called to order, Mr. Hu suggested they offer Ms. Pulaski a slightly larger share of the inheritance in exchange for a transcript of the will in English.
However, I repeat, neither my partner nor I stole the notes, and if anyone here suspects us of murder, forget it. We both have airtight alibis.
Doug choked on his sweet roll. If it got around to alibis, they'd find out where he was the night of the murder, on the Westinghouse lawn. Mr. Hu went on,
and to prove our innocence, my partner and I agreed to share our clues.
1 minute, Mr. Hu.
Judge Ford stood. It was time for her to speak before matters got out of hand.
Let me remind you, all of you, that a person is innocent until proven guilty. We are free to choose whether or not to share our clues without any implication of guilt. I suggest we postpone any decision until we have given the matter careful thought, and until the time all of the heirs can attend. However, since we are assembled, I have a question to ask of the group. Perhaps others do too.
They all did. Wary of giving away game plans, the heirs decided the questions would be written out, but no names were to be signed. Doug collected the scraps of paper and handed them to Theo.
Is anyone here a twin?
He read. No one answered.
What is Turtle's real name?
Doug Hu was planning another nasty sign.
Tabitha Ruth,
replied Mrs. Wexler with a bewildered look at Flora Baumbach, who said,
Alice.
Well, which is it?
Tabitha Ruth Wexler, I should know. I'm her mother.
Doug changed his mind about the sign. He couldn't spell Tabitha Ruth. Theo unfolded the next question. How many here have actually met Sam Westing? Grace Wexler raised her hand, lowered it, raised it halfway, then lowered it again, torn between her claim as Sam Westing's relative and being accused of murder. Mr. Who, an honest man, held up his hand and kept it up. His was the only one. Judge Ford did not think it necessary to respond to her own question. Theo recognized the sprawling handwriting of the next question. Who got kicked last week? Chris did not receive an answer. The meeting was adjourned due to panic. Chapter 12. The First Bomb. It was so sudden. The ear-splitting bangs, the screams, the confusion. Theo and Doug ran into the kitchen. Mrs. Theodorakis ran out. Her hair, her face, her apron were splattered with dark, dripping, red.
Blood!
Seidel Pulaski cried, clutching her heart.
Don't just sit there! Catherine Theodorakis shouted. Somebody call the fire department!
Angela hurried to the payphone on the wall and stood there trembling, not knowing whether to call or not. They were snowbound. The fire engines could not reach Sunset Towers. Theo leaned through the kitchen doorway.
Everything's okay. There's no fire. Chris, honey, it's all right,
Mrs. Theodorakis said, kneeling before the wheelchair.
It's all right, Chris. Look, it's just tomato sauce.
Tomato sauce. Mrs. Theodorakis was covered with tomato sauce, not blood. The curious heirs now piled into the kitchen, except for Seidel Pulaski, who slumped to the counter. She could have a heart attack, and no one would notice. Mr. Hu surveyed the scene, trying to conceal his delight.
What a mess, he said. That row of cans must have exploded from the heat of the stove.
The entire kitchen was splattered with tomato sauce and soaked in foam from the fire extinguishers.
What a mess.
George Theodorakis regarded him with suspicion.
It was a bomb.
Catherine Theodorakis thought so too.
There was hissing, then bang, bang, sparks flying all over the kitchen, red sparks, purple sparks.
Cans of tomato sauce exploded, Doug Hu said, defending his father. The others agreed. Mrs. Theodorakis was understandably hysterical. A bomb? Ridiculous. Sam Westing certainly did not appear to have been killed by a bomb. Judge Ford suggested that the accident be reported to the police immediately in order to collect on the insurance.
You might as well redecorate the entire kitchen,
Grace Wexler, decorator, proposed.
It should be functional yet attractive, with lots of copper pots hanging from the ceiling. I don't think there's any real damage,
Catherine Theodorakis replied.
But we'll have to close for a few days to clean up.
Mr. Hu smiled. Angela offered to help.
Angela, dear, you have a fitting this afternoon,
Grace reminded her.
And we have so much to do for the wedding shower on Saturday.
In thumped Seidel Pulaski.
I'm fine now, just a bit woozy. Goodness, what a nasty turn.
Having recovered from the nasty turn, Seidel Pulaski settled down to transcribing her shorthand to Polish, then from Polish to English. Startled by loud banging on her apartment door, she struck the wrong typewriter key.
Open up!
Recognizing the voice, Angela unbolted the door to a furious turtle.
All right, Angela, where is it?
What?
The newspaper you stole from my desk.
Angela carefully dug through the embroidery, personal items, and other paraphernalia in her tapestry bag, and pulled out the newspaper folded to the Westing obituary.
I'm sorry, Turtle, I would have asked for it, but you weren't around. You don't also happen to have my Mickey Mouse clock in there, too, do you?
Turtle softened on seeing her sister's hurt expression.
I'm only kidding. You left your engagement ring on the sink again. Better go get it before somebody steals that, too. Oh, I wouldn't worry about anyone stealing Angela's ring,
Seidel Pulaski remarked.
No, Mother would stoop that low.
The thought of Grace being the burglar was so funny to Turtle, she plopped down on the sofa and rolled about in laughter. It felt good to laugh. The stock market had fallen 5 points today.
Angela, please tell your sister to get her dirty shoes off my couch. Tell her to sit up and act like a lady.
Turtle rose with a tongue click very much like her mother's, but she was not about to leave without striking back. Arms folded, she leaned against the wall and let them have it.
Mom thinks Angela was the one who stole the shorthand notebook.
That got them. Look at those open mouths.
Because Mom asked to see it, and Angela does everything she says. Anyone could have stolen my notebook. I didn't double lock my door that day.
If Seidel couldn't trust her own partner, she was alone. All alone.
Did Mom really say that?
Angela asked.
No, but I know how she thinks. I know what everybody thinks. Grown-ups are so obvious. Ridiculous, scoffed Seidel. For instance, I know that Angela doesn't want to marry that sappy intern. Ridiculous. You're just jealous of your sister.
Maybe, Turtle had to admit.
But I am what I am. I don't need a crutch to get attention.
Oh. Oh, she had gone too far.
Turtle didn't mean it that way, Seidel, Angela said quickly. She used the word crutch as a symbol. She meant, you know, that people are so afraid of revealing their true selves, they have to hide behind some sort of prop. Oh, really? Seidel replied. Then Turtle's crutch is her big mouth.
No, Angela thought, hurrying her sister out of the door and back to their apartment. Turtle's crutch is her braid. The newspaper man called again to say he had found some photographs taken at Westingtown parties 20 years ago.
One of those names appears in a caption as Violet Westing's escort, George Theodorakis.
Go on, the judge said.
That's all.
He promised to send her the clippings in the Westing file as soon as he was shoveled out. The judge now knew of 4 heirs with Westing connections. James Hu, the inventor. Theo's father. Her partner, Sandy McSouthers, who had been fired from the Westing paper mill, and herself. But she had to learn more, much more, about each one of the heirs if she hoped to protect the victim of Sam Westing's revenge. She would have to hire a detective, a very private detective, who had not been associated with her in her practice or in the courts. J.J. Ford flipped through the yellow pages to investigators, private.
Good grief!
Her finger stopped near the top of the list. Was it a coincidence? Or dumb luck? Or was she playing right into Sam Westing's hand? No choice but to chance it. The judge dialed the number and tapped her foot impatiently, waiting for an answer.
Hello. If you're looking for a snowbound private investigator, you've got the right number.
Yes, she had the right number. It might be a trick, but it was no coincidence. The voices were one and the same. Chapter 13. The Second Bomb. No one was in the kitchen of Shin Hu's restaurant when the bomber set a tall can labeled monosodium glutamate behind similar cans on a shelf. The color-striped candle would burn down to the fuse at 6:30. Whoever was working there would be at the other end of the room. No one would be hurt.
Due to the unfortunate damage to the coffee shop, Shin Hu's restaurant is prepared to satisfy all dinner accommodations. Order down or ride up to the 5th floor. Treat your taste buds to a scrumptious meal while feasting your eyes on the stunning snowscape before it melts away. Reasonable prices, too.
Grace Wexler tacked her sign to the elevator wall as she rode up to her new job. She was going to be the seating hostess.
Where's the cook?
Mr. Hu shouted, meaning his wife. He found Madam Hu in their rear 4th floor apartment, kneeling before her bamboo trunk, fingering mementos from her childhood in China. He hurried her up to the kitchen, too harried to find the words that would explain what was happening. Now where was that lazy son of his? Doug jogged in from a tiring workout on the stairs. How was he supposed to know the restaurant would open early? Nobody bothered telling him.
Some student you are. Anyone with the brain of an anteater could have figured that out. People are short of food. The coffee shop is closed for repairs.
stop arguing. Go take a shower and put on your busboy outfit. Get moving.
Don't you think you're rather hard on the boy?
Grace commented.
Somebody's got to give him a shove. If he had his way, he'd do nothing but run,
Hu replied between bits of chocolate.
You're not so easy on Angela, either.
Angela? Angela was born good, the perfect child. As for the other one, well,
it's not easy being a parent, Hu said woefully.
You can say that again.
Grace held her breath. Her husband would have done just that, said it again, but Mr. Hu only nodded in shared sympathy. What a gentleman. Only Mr. and Mrs. Theodorakis ordered down. The other tenants of Sunset Towers lined up at the reservations desk, waiting for Grace Windsor Wexler to lead the way. Oversized menus clutched in her arms, Grace felt the first proud stirrings of power rush up from her pedicured toes to the very top curl on her head. If Uncle Sam could pair off people, so could she.
You see your brother every day, Chris. How about eating with someone else for a change?
She wheeled the boy to a window table without waiting for an answer. It would have been yes. The two cripples together, Sidell Pulaski thought. She'd show that high and mighty hostess. She'd show them all. She and Chris could have private jokes, too, and everybody would be sorry they weren't sitting with them.
Was Mugugaipen?
Chris asked, baffled by the strange words on the menu.
I think it's boiled grasshopper.
Sidell screwed up her face, and Chris laughed.
Or chocolate-covered mousse. French fry mouse,
Chris offered. Now Sidell laughed. They both laughed heartily, but no one envied them.
Your brother seems to be enjoying Ms. Pulaski.
Theo nodded, awed by the beautiful Angela, 3 years older than he, so fair-skinned and blonde, so unattainable. Here he was, sitting at the very same table with her, just the two of them, and he couldn't think of a single thing to say that wasn't stupid or childishly stupid. Usually the quiet one, Angela tried again.
Are you planning to go to college next year?
Theo nodded, then shook his head. Say something, idiot.
I got a scholarship to Madison, but I'm not going. I'm going to work instead.
What big, worried, sky-blue eyes. The operation for Chris will be very expensive. That was worse. Now she's feeling sorry for him.
If Chris had been born that way, maybe it wouldn't be so bad, but he was a perfectly normal kid. A great kid. And he's smart, too. About 4 years ago, he started to get clumsy. Just little things at first.
Perhaps my fiancé can help.
Angela bit her lip. Theo was not asking for charity. And fiancé, what an old-fashioned, silly word.
I went to college for a year. I wanted to be a doctor, but, well, we don't have as much money as my mother pretends. Dad said he could manage if that's what I really wanted, but my mother said it was too difficult for a woman to get into medical school.
Why was she gabbing like this? I want to be a writer, Theo said. That really sounded like kid stuff.
Would you go back to college if you won the inheritance?
Angela looked down. It was a question she did not want to answer. Or could not answer. Long before becoming a judge, Josie Joe Ford had decided to stop smiling. Smiling without good reason was demeaning. A serious face put the smiler on the defensive. A rare smile put a nervous witness at ease. She now bestowed one of her rare smiles on the dressmaker.
I'm so glad we have this chance to become acquainted, Mrs. Baumbach. I had so little time to chat with my guests last night. It was a wonderful party.
Flora Baumbach appeared even smaller and rounder than she was as she sat twisting her napkin with hands accustomed to being busy. Was her face permanently creased from years of pleasing customers? Or was a tragedy lurking behind that grin?
Have you always specialized in wedding gowns?
Mr.